A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's asking about the bridge between OT systems running Modbus and the IT world of Home Assistant, Ethernet, and IP. The core question, you've got a heat pump, a solar inverter, maybe an industrial VFD sitting there speaking Modbus RTU over serial, and you want it in your smart home dashboard. The obvious answer is a $50 Ethernet gateway. But the real question isn't, can I bridge it? It's, will it actually work once I do? And then there's the thing. Nobody tells you up front. You can't bridge Modbus directly to Zigbee or Matter.
This is the single most common integration pain point right now. Heat pumps, solar arrays, battery management systems are becoming standard home equipment, and nearly all of them speak Modbus or BACnet on the inside, while your smart home speaks TCP/IP. The gap looks small. It is not small.
Let's break down what a Modbus to Ethernet gateway actually does and doesn't do, because that's where most people get tripped up.
At the protocol level, here's what's happening. Your OT device, say a solar inverter, is sitting on an RS-485 serial bus speaking Modbus RTU. That's a binary protocol where each byte is framed with start bits, stop bits, and a CRC checksum, all running over a differential pair of wires. Home Assistant expects to talk Modbus TCP, same Modbus application layer, but wrapped inside TCP packets on an IP network. The gateway's job is to strip the serial framing off the Modbus RTU message, extract the Modbus PDU, the protocol data unit, wrap it in a Modbus TCP header, and send it out over Ethernet, and vice versa for responses.
It's a translator at the transport layer, not the application layer. It doesn't know what a holding register is. It's just repackaging bytes.
And that distinction is everything. The gateway handles hurdle number one, physical and transport. But there are two more hurdles after that, and those are the ones that burn people. Hurdle two is whether the OT device actually speaks standard Modbus function codes. Hurdle three is whether you have the register map. The document that tells you register 4001 means grid power in watts as a 32-bit signed integer across two registers. Without that map, you're poking registers in the dark.
Which sounds like a great way to accidentally set your heat pump to lava mode.
Surprisingly easy to do, actually. Write to the wrong register, and you might change your factory calibration value that you can't get back without the manufacturer's service tool.
This episode is a three-part journey. Part 1. Picking the right gateway hardware, with real prices and real gotchas. Part 2. Verifying your OT device will actually respond to commands once the gateway is working. Part 3. Understanding what you absolutely cannot bridge, and why Zigbee and Matter are dead ends for direct Modbus integration, plus the workaround that actually functions.
Let's start with the hardware. I've been testing three gateways at different price points, and the results might surprise you.
Hit me with the budget option first. What's the cheapest thing that actually works?
The USR WiFi 232 series. You can get one on AliExpress for $25 to $40 depending on the variant. It's a tiny module, serial on one side, Wi-Fi on the other, and it does exactly what we just described, takes Modbus RTU frames off the RS-485 bus, wraps them in TCP, and sends them over Wi-Fi to your Home Assistant server.
$25. What's the catch?
First, there's no web UI. You configure this thing entirely through AT commands over a serial console. You connect to it with a USB to serial adapter, open a terminal, and type things like AT plus WiFi underscore MOD equals STA. It's not hard if you've done serial console work before, but it's not a product for someone who expects a friendly configuration page.
It's the I know what a baud rate is, and I'm not afraid to set one manually option.
Second catch, it auto-detects baud rate, which sounds great. Plug it in, it figures out the speed. But here's the problem. If your OT device is actually configured for 9600 baud and the gateway auto-detects 19200, you'll get garbled data, but you won't get an obvious error. The gateway will happily pass corrupted frames to Home Assistant, and you'll see sensor values that look plausible but are completely wrong.
That is so much worse than just failing. A silent liar of a gateway.
It's the worst failure mode. And the third catch, IP assignment. The USR WI5232 defaults to DHCP, but it has no MDNS, no UPnP, no discovery protocol of any kind. When it grabs an IP from your router, you have no idea what that IP is unless you check your router's DHCP lease table or run an ARP scan. There's no static fallback IP. If your router hands out a new lease and you didn't write down the MAC address, you're hunting for it.
The $25 option works, but you'd better be comfortable with serial terminals, ARP scans, and the quiet terror of auto-detected baud rates.
That's the summary, yes. Now, the sweet spot, and this is what I'd recommend for almost anyone doing home integration, is the Waveshare Modbus PoE Gateway, about $52 on Amazon. It's a small metal box with a removable screw terminal for RS-485, an Ethernet port that supports power over Ethernet, and crucially, a web configuration page.
A web UI.
At a static fallback IP of 192.168.1.232, you plug it in, point a browser at that address, and you get a full configuration page where you set the baud rate manually. No auto detection guesswork. Choose Modbus RTU or ASCII mode, set the TCP port, configure the serial parameters. It also supports both Modbus TCP to RTU and Modbus TCP to ASCII, which matters because some older industrial gear speaks Modbus ASCII rather than RTU.
The screw terminal is actually a meaningful detail. A lot of cheap gateways use a DB9 connector, and then you're crimping a DE9 adapter to screw terminals anyway.
Right, the Waveshare has the screw terminal built in, so your A and B wires from the RS-485 bus go straight into the gateway. No adapters, no dongles. It also supports RS-485 termination resistor configuration in the web UI, which is critical. On a long RS-485 run, anything over maybe 10 or 15 meters, you need termination resistors at both ends of the bus to prevent signal reflections. Reflections cause bit errors that look like intermittent device dropouts. Many cheap gateways omit termination entirely, and you'll spend a weekend chasing a ghost problem that's actually a missing 120 ohm resistor.
The third tier? You mentioned industrial options.
The Moxa M-Gate 5105-MB-EIP, around $285 from DigiKey. This is an industrial gateway. Dual Ethernet ports for daisy chaining, SNMP monitoring, operating temperature range of minus 40 to plus 75 Celsius, DIN rail mounting, dual power inputs. It's built for a factory floor where downtime costs thousands of dollars an hour.
Which a home server closet is not.
Unless your server closet is also a steel mill, you're overpaying by about $230 for reliability you don't need. The Waveshare will run for years in a basement or garage without issue. The Moxa is for when your gateway is bolted to a vibrating machine inside an unventilated enclosure in Arizona in August.
The actionable recommendation, Waveshare PoE Gateway, $52, web UI, screw terminals, termination support. That's the baseline.
That's the baseline. Now once you've got it wired up, you need to configure Home Assistant to talk to it. Home Assistant has a built-in Modbus integration that speaks Modbus TCP. You configure it in YAML. There's no UI setup for this one yet. Here's what a basic config looks like for a solar inverter on unit ID 1, reading holding register 40001.
Walk me through it.
You add a Modbus section to your configuration.yaml. You specify the gateway's IP address, port 502, that's the standard Modbus TCP port, and then you define a sensor. The sensor has a name, let's say grid power, a unit of measurement, watts, and it points to hold in register address 1, which is the zero-based version of register 40001. Modbus addressing is a whole separate headache. Some devices use one-based addressing, some use zero-based, and the register number 40001 might actually be address 0 or address 1 depending on the manufacturer's convention.
The number 40001, which is what the manual says, might not actually be address 40001.
Modbus has a bizarre history where the register number and the register address are different things. The 4 prefix means it's a holding register. The actual address is the remaining digits minus 1, usually. So register 40001 is address 0. But some manufacturers document the register as 40001 and mean address 1, and some manufacturers use hexadecimal. The register map document is the only source of truth, and you have to read it carefully.
Step 1. Buy the gateway. Step 2. Obtain the register map and pray it's not written in Chinglish riddles.
Step 3. Test with a simple read before you do anything in Home Assistant. I recommend a tool called Modbus Poll on Windows or MB Poll on Linux. It's a command line Modbus client. You point it at the gateway's IP, tell it to read holding register address 0 or 1, and see if you get a number back. If you can read register 0001 and get a value that changes when you turn on a load, the gateway and device are talking. That's your smoke test.
Okay, you've got the gateway wired up and configured. Now comes the hard part. Will your actual device cooperate?
This is where most projects stall. The gateway solved the physical and transport layers, but the OT device has to speak standard Modbus function codes. The core ones are function code 03, read holding registers, function code 06, write single register, and function code 16, write multiple registers. If your device implements those, great. The problem is that many Chinese solar inverters and heat pump controllers use custom function codes or non-standard CRC variants.
Give me a real example.
DI hybrid inverters. These are very popular. You see them rebranded as Solark in the US market. They use function code 03 for reading, which is standard, but they implement a non-standard CRC checksum variant. The standard Modbus CRC is a 16-bit cyclic redundancy check calculated over the entire message. DI's variant uses a different polynomial or a different initial value. The documentation isn't clear which, and the result is that a standard gateway passes the message through. The inverter receives it, computes the CRC, gets a mismatch, and silently discards the request. You get no response, no error, just timeout.
There's no fix for that at the gateway level.
The gateway doesn't know what a CRC is. It's just forwarding bytes. The CRC is computed by the Modbus stack on the device. If the device's stack is non-standard, you need a custom Modbus library that implements the same variant. Some people have reverse engineered the DI CRC and written Python libraries for it. But that's a software project, not a plug-and-play integration.
Even with a perfectly good gateway, your inverter might just...
And the other big gotcha is the register map problem. Take this SoFar Solar inverter. They publish a full Modbus register map, which is wonderful. Holding register 0x000A, that's hex A, decimal 10, contains grid power as assigned 32-bit integer spanning two consecutive registers. You read register 10 and register 11, combine them into a 32-bit value, interpret as signed, and you get the current grid power in watts. That works because SoFar documented it.
Not everyone does.
Fronius and SMA publish complete maps. DI and Solark treat them as proprietary. You have to sign an NDA or find a leaked document. Some heat pump manufacturers expose temperature readings via Modbus, but require their proprietary app or an IR remote to change set points. The Modbus interface is read only by design. The gateway can't add write capability that doesn't exist in the device firmware.
This is the read-only trap. You can see the temperature, but you can't change it. You built a monitoring dashboard, not a control system.
That might be fine for your use case, but you need to know that up front. The way to test, use MBPoll or ModbusPoll to attempt to write to a non-critical register, something like a reset counter or a display brightness value. If the write succeeds and you can read back the new value, the device supports writes. If it fails with an exception code or times out, you're read only.
The checklist so far. Get the register map, verify standard function codes, test reads, test writes. And if any of those steps fail, you're looking at a custom software project, not a weekend integration.
Now let's talk about the hard protocol boundary, the one that generates the most confused forum posts and Amazon questions. Can you bridge Modbus directly to Zigbee or Matter?
I've seen this question. Someone has a Modbus solar inverter and a house full of Zigbee light switches, and they want the inverter's power reading to trigger a switch, so they search for a Modbus to Zigbee adapter.
They find nothing. Because no such product exists. And the reason isn't that nobody's gotten around to it, it's that the protocols are fundamentally incompatible at the data model layer.
Break that down. Why can't someone just build a box that translates Modbus registers to Zigbee clusters?
Modbus is a request-response protocol. A client sends a read request to a server. The server responds with data. The data model is flat. Registers are just 16-bit integers at numbered addresses. There's no concept of a device type, no standard meaning for any register. Register 4001 on a SOFAR inverter means grid power. On a different inverter, it might mean battery voltage. On a heat pump, it might mean compressor speed. The meaning is entirely in the register map document. Zigbee is a mesh network built on the ITEE 802.15.4 radio standard. On top of that sits the Zigbee Cluster Library, ZCL, which defines application profiles. A smart energy meter has a specific cluster ID for power readings. A light switch has a different cluster for on-off state. The data model is hierarchical and typed. Clusters contain attributes. Attributes have data types, and the meaning is defined by the Zigbee specification, not by a manufacturer's register map.
To translate Modbus to Zigbee, you'd need a device that knows that register 10 on this specific inverter model means grid power, and that grid power maps to the smart energy cluster's active power attribute. And that mapping is different for every single device.
For every single register on every single device model from every single manufacturer. It's not a protocol translation problem, it's a semantic mapping problem that requires per-device configuration. A generic Modbus to Zigbee gateway would need a configuration file that says register 10 is a 32-bit signed integer in watts, map it to cluster 0x0702, attribute 0x0400, and someone has to write that mapping for every device.
It's not technically impossible. It's a product nightmare. Infinite configuration surface, tiny addressable market.
Matter has the same problem. Matter is an application layer standard that runs over Thread or Wi-Fi. It has a defined data model with device types, light, lock, thermostat, energy monitor, and each device type has mandatory and optional attributes. Matter 1.3 added an energy management cluster, which is great for power monitoring, but there's no Modbus bridge profile in the Matter specification. There's no standard way to say this. Matter device is actually a proxy for a Modbus register.
No vendor has stepped up to build one.
As of July 2026, no off-the-shelf Modbus to Zigbee or Modbus to Matter gateway product exists. The addressable market, people with industrial Modbus equipment in their smart homes, is still tiny. It's a business problem, not a technical impossibility.
What do you actually do if you need Modbus data in a Zigbee or Matter system?
You use MQTT as the intermediary. This is a multi-hop software solution, not a direct bridge. The path is Modbus device to Modbus to Ethernet. Gateway to a microcontroller running a Modbus client that publishes to MQTT, and then MQTT to Zigbee via Zigbee to MQTT, or MQTT to Matter via a Matter bridge.
The cheapest microcontroller for this?
An ESP32 board, about $8 on AliExpress. Running ESPS Home. ESPS Home has a Modbus underscore controller component that can read and write any Modbus register. You configure it with the register addresses, data types, and polling interval, and it publishes the values to MQTT topics. From there, Home Assistant can pick them up, or you can use Zigbee to MQTT's MQTT input to bridge into the Zigbee network, or run a Matter bridge on a Raspberry Pi that subscribes to those MQTT topics and exposes them as Matter attributes.
The signal chain is RS-485 to gateway to Ethernet, to ESP32, to MQTT, to Zigbee to MQTT, to Zigbee radio, to your light switch. That's 6 hops.
Each hop adds latency. Typical end-to-end latency for that chain is 50 to 200 milliseconds. For turning on a light based on solar production, that's perfectly fine. For anything requiring real-time control, like load shedding during a grid outage, you'd want to shorten the chain. Maybe cut out Zigbee entirely and have the ESP32 trigger a relay directly.
The rule is, MQTT is the universal translator. Modbus to MQTT, then MQTT to whatever you need. There is no direct bridge, and there probably won't be one until the market grows enough to justify the product development cost.
Even then, it'll be per device type. A Modbus to Matter bridge for solar inverters is plausible because the energy management cluster now exists. A bridge for heat pumps would need a thermostat cluster mapping. A bridge for VFDs would need a motor control cluster that doesn't exist in Matter yet. Each device category is a separate product.
We've covered what works and what doesn't. Let me give you a concrete checklist you can use next time you're staring at a Modbus device, wondering if it'll play nice.
Step 1. Buy a gateway with RS-485 termination and a web UI. The Waveshare PoE gateway at about $50 is the current best value. If you're on a tight budget and comfortable with serial consoles, the USR WI-5232 at $25 works, but budget an extra hour for ARP scanning and AT command configuration.
Step 2. Before buying anything, obtain the device's Modbus register map. If the manufacturer won't provide it, assume the device is incompatible. Not, might be tricky. Assume it won't work. The register map is not optional.
Step 3. Test read capability first. Use Modbus Poll or MBPoll to read register 0001. If you get a value back that changes when the device operates, the gateway and device are talking. This is your smoke test. Don't skip it and jump straight to Home Assistant YAML.
Step 4. Test write capability. By writing to a non-critical register, a reset counter, a display brightness, anything that won't break the device if it actually writes. If the write fails, you're in read-only mode. Plan your integration accordingly.
Step 5. The Zigbee and Matter rule. If you need Modbus data in a Zigbee or Matter system, MQTT is your intermediary. ESPS foam on an ESP32 is the cheapest path. $8 for the board, free firmware. Expect 50 to 200 milliseconds of latency. There is no direct bridge, and anyone selling you a Modbus to Zigbee adapter is selling a product that doesn't exist.
One more thing on future-proofing. Consider gateways that support MQTT natively. The USR Wi-Fi 232 can be flashed with custom firmware that publishes directly to MQTT, bypassing Home Assistant entirely for simple monitoring. That reduces single points of failure. If Home Assistant is down for maintenance, your Modbus data is still flowing to MQTT and can be consumed by other systems.
There's also the Waveshare Gateway with a newer firmware that added a basic MQTT client mode. It's not well documented, but it's in the settings under Cloud Service. You point it at your MQTT broker and it publishes register values on configurable topics. That's a cleaner architecture than going through Home Assistant's Modbus integration if all you need is data forwarding.
One last thing to think about, and this is the frontier where I think we'll see movement in the next year or two.
As Matter matures, the energy management cluster in Matter 1.3 is a real step forward. It defines standard attributes for power, voltage, current, and energy, exactly the data you'd pull from a Modbus solar inverter. The protocol translation problem is solvable. Someone just needs to build a product that maps Modbus registers to Matter energy attributes, with a configuration interface for specifying which register is which.
The hard part isn't the bytes, it's the configuration UX. How do you make a product that a homeowner can set up when every inverter has a different register map?
That's the business problem. One approach would be a community-driven database of register maps. You select your inverter model from a dropdown, and the bridge auto-configures the mappings. ESPA Foam already has something like this with its device configurations, but maintaining that database is a full-time job, and the market of people bridging industrial Modbus gear into Matter is still measured in thousands, not millions.
For now, the practical answer is, learn MQTT, buy an ESP32, and accept the multi-hob architecture. It's not elegant, but it works.
If you've built something cleaner, if you've actually created a custom Modbus to Matter bridge or a streamlined integration that handles the register mapping gracefully, email the show. We'd love to feature your build. show@myweirdprompts.com.
We're genuinely curious if someone's cracked the configuration UX problem. That's the bottleneck. And now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
In 1846, a dust storm originating in the Kaizalkum Desert deposited a layer of wind-borne sediment across the Fergana Valley in present-day Tajikistan that was thick enough to preserve a single intact apricot leaf, still identifiable by species, between two strata of loess where it was discovered by a Soviet geological survey team in 1953.
An apricot leaf. From 1846, sandwiched in dust.
I have questions about the survey team's filing system, but I'll save them.
This has been My Weird Prompts. If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a review wherever you get your podcasts. It helps other people find the show. I'm Korn.
I'm Herman Poppleberry. Thanks for listening.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, my weird prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth's slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.